It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. Merry Christmas. We're doing this one just a little bit later than usual. We usually get a podcast out every Sunday night. It's around Tuesday by the time this launches. That's because Sunday's Christmas, so I apologize for a little bit of tardiness, but I doubt you were waiting for a podcast on Christmas Day. This one, on Christmas, we got a new Doctor Who. We haven't had a new Doctor Who in about a year. And so I thought this would be a great opportunity to run another panel from Chicago TARDIS while we're talking about Doctor Who. Also, being Christmas, a lot of you have added to your collectibles, and this podcast panel is called Is It Too Much? And it was a really interesting discussion about how much canon can you maintain in your head, and how much space do you have in your house for the things you love. Now, we're focused mostly on Doctor Who, but we do get into other things like Marvel and Star Wars and some of the other genres that are, you collect heavily. Nathan Laws and Nathan Skreslet are both on the panel with me. They are fantastic, and they will explain to you their expertise and where you can find them. It was a lot of fun, and I got to moderate again, and here we go. This is the Is There Too Much or Isn't There panel. We're going to be discussing the expanded universe, things like the Big Finish audio dramas, the books, the comics, basically everything that's not the television show. I'm John Clark. I'm the host of the Caffeinated Comics podcast, and I'm a writer in marketing and pop culture.
My name is Nathan Laws. For several years, I was the co-producer of a podcast that was aptly named by my friend Sean Kastick. I've also been a guest on various podcasts, but I'm starting my own, starting with the new year, which is called the 42 Cast, which is a tee up off the Douglas Adams Answer to Life, the Universe, and Everything being 42. I call my podcast the Answer to Fandom Geekiness and Everything. I have business cards here up front in case you are interested. The email address does work, although the website is not yet published. So in January, look for that.
Hey, cool. Hey, I'm Nathan Skreslet. I'm the artist behind Pixel Who. We're over in the dealer room if you want to check out our stuff. But we do original 8-bit Doctor Who artwork. Also did the cover of the program many of you are probably holding right now. This past 2 years, actually, we've been working with the BBC on their mobile game.
Great. So to jump right in, we have 53 years of Doctor Who, not counting this year where there was nothing, but we've had almost 1,000 episodes. It's hard for anyone to digest, especially someone coming in late. And in addition to that, we have all these other media serving the same franchise. We have hundreds of novels and comic books and games and audio dramas. So the question is there a saturation point? And the more important question, as a fan, where a lot of us are also, how many people in the room are consider themselves collectors? A few. So in terms of a collecting mentality, there is this feeling of, I want everything. I want to be able to have everything. And even if it's something you can't tangentially collect, we can go into the dealer room and get every action figure, but you want to have seen every episode. You want to know everything the Doctor has done. You want to be well versed in the Doctor's history. Is it at all possible? And if it's not, where do you draw the line?
Well, I think that there's also the question of when we say, is it all too much? Is it that there's too much because it's too expensive, or is it too much because we don't have enough time? because, you know, those are two. There's two different problems there that aren't quite related to each other.
Well, I think the third thing is there enough space as well?
That's true.
You know, to put all this stuff. So, like the TARDIS, the question is time and space.
Yeah.
And money. I think it's more time than space, because with the internet, there's so many ways you can get things. At the very least, legally, you can connect to somebody who will lend you one of their books or audio dramas.
Yeah. It used to be a lot more difficult to obtain this stuff.
Right. You know? That was the reason we would have conventions like this, just to be able to meet people that liked the show, because you'd be in your town and you'd be the only one.
Yeah. Now you can get anything you want on Amazon. You're only restricted by your financial
situation. And you can get anything that ever was on eBay.
Yeah.
My copy of Curse of the Fatal Death might actually be a bootleg, because back in the day they used to say, oh, that'll never be allowed in the U.S. because it was done for charity. Mm-hmm. So I actually purchased it at a con. It was a bootleg copy that was, you know, copied onto a U.S. VCR NTSC format so I could watch it. And so I thought, well, it's legit because it'll never be offered here. Then, of course, like 2 years later, it was offered here, and I felt kind of bad.
Right. But, copy of the Curse of Fatal Death exists on YouTube.
Yeah.
There is that, and there's also that mentality of, I think you brought up a great point, Nathan, since it's coming from overseas, what's available there that's not available here, which increases its rarity, or increases the likelihood you won't be able to get it.
I did figure out how to hack my DVD player so that I could buy the Region 2 version of The Chase, because it has the scene with the Beatles in it that's cut from our version, so.
We were just...
Now they sell the Region 3 stuff. So if you really want to, you can get an all-region play.
We were just discussing the Chase. What is the Beatle footage?
So the time-space visual, when they're playing with the time-space visualizer, they each take a moment in history they want to watch. And to Vicky, the Beatles are ancient history, but she's like, oh, I want to see the Beatles because, you know, they're legendary. And so they actually, it's a whole music video clip of the Beatles performing on some BBC program or other.
So, yeah, they didn't come to Doctor Who and shoot it. They just picked something else up from the BBC. Do you remember what song it was?
I think it was
Ticket to Ride.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Was it?
Yeah. Ticket to Ride.
Yeah,
because I can always imagine Ian going, you got it. he does kind of like dad singing, dancing.
Yeah, Troughton did have that swing in London 60s Austin Powersness to it. But Nathan, what do you think? Yeah. How much capacity do you think you have?
Literally, my entire office is made of bookshelves.
How so full are those bookshelves?
They're very full, in fact. You know, I started out when I was 8 years old collecting the Target books, and that was kind of my gateway drug. It took me probably 14 years to complete all of those, and by then, of course, you know, then there were the Virgin novels, and then there were the, you know, the first BBC Eighth Doctor range, and, you know... at the same time, there's, you know, nonfiction reference books and all that stuff. And literally, you know, they're just covering my entire house. But it's really hard to say no.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I've got three shelves devoted to CDs, you know, with all the different audio dramas, and like you, I have all the bookshelves and everything. My wife thinks it's insane, but, you know, I just keep getting it.
What you were saying earlier, though, I think it's also an issue of brain space, because I've read all of those books, but I couldn't necessarily quote you the plot of probably half of them.
Right. That's a major problem. I was just reading, I bought a long run of Spider-Man on eBay that I hadn't read before, and I just started with issue one, and I'm like around issue 80 of it, and I've been reading it for a couple weeks, and just today, he mentioned, a villain came back, and he's like, I thought you were dead, and I'm like, when did that happen? Mm-hmm. And I realized, it happened when I read it 4 days ago, but it's already out of my head because more content is pouring in. And that becomes an issue, I think. The important thing is, what do you remember and what do you care about? So if something happens in a book that you cared about more than something that happened in season 8, that's going to become part of your personal canon, but that doesn't mean it's part of my personal canon, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for me, a lot of that issue of canon is actually a really good discussion, too, because to me, the books came out right after the series ended. I'm talking about the Virgin New Adventures. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I always saw that as a legitimate continuation of the series, because the one came right after the other ended. And so it's been difficult for me, like with Big Finish and comics and the new series and everything else, because they all say, well, I don't care about those books. And sometimes they do, you know, specific authors will. But for the most part, they're like, we're going to do our own thing and we're not going to worry about what happened in the books, especially since that line of original novels that aren't tie-ins to an existing series is done. And so to me, the books have a sort of primacy in that respect. Big Finish has a primacy because it's actually the actors themselves in it. And so to me, one of the things that I do is I kind of don't even look at the comics, because to me there's already so much content with two things that I consider to be fairly prime sources of Doctor Who, and the comics to me feel like, well, that's just another step removed from prime Doctor Who. I am intrigued by some of the things that I hear from time to time. I know that there's some good runs out there. There were the Fourth Doctor adventures that came out a while back that I was curious about, and now there's Third Doctor adventures and, you know, all sorts of things, but I that's how I've limited myself, because it does get to be too much and there is a time factor.
Well, I think it's a very interesting point. I'd like to build on that and something that John asked us earlier about collectors. He said, how many people here are collectors? Perhaps there are different types of collectors. There are absolute completists who will buy anything and everything, even if they think it's total crap. Like, somebody who hates Time and the Ranting will have to have that in their collection because it's Doctor Who. Whereas, you know, to your point, there is so much. There's almost no way now that you can listen to every single Big Finish audio. I mean, even if you do it in your car on the way to work. So other collectors will take the path that you took, which is, I will only collect the things I care about, and this other stuff, it's dead to me. I'm not even going to pay attention to it.
Yeah, there are other things that Big Finish does that I'd love to listen. I'd love to listen to the Blake Seven stuff that they're doing, but there's so much Doctor Who that I still haven't listened to, and that's even with, I almost don't even listen to music in the car anymore, because it's constant Big Finish. Every time I take a ride somewhere, it's some new audio drama. So I just have to say, Blake Seven, I'm sorry, but, you know, even though I love you, you know, that I love Doctor Who more, so I'm going to stay with that.
Yeah, you have to set your personal limitations at some point. I mean, you're, like you said, it's impossible to, almost physically and financially impossible, I think, to collect every single thing that is out there. I would love to collect all of the toys, but it's just, there's too much. So I limited myself to just collecting Daleks.
Wow. Yeah, I started just collecting Doctors, and that didn't last that long.
Oh, right.
And I was like, well, you have to have a Dalek, and you have to have this TARDIS.
Oh, yeah, the thing with the toys is that it's like, these are all the toys I wanted when I was a kid.
Yes.
Because I've been a Doctor Who fan since I was five.
Right.
So, you know, I always wanted there to be associated, you know, Star Wars had action figures, and Star Trek had action figures, everything else had action figures, but not Doctor Who.
And
so
the quality is remarkably high.
Oh, my God. Well, toy collecting is my Achilles heel, because I grew up when their Migos had just ended and Star Wars was out, and Star Wars was amazing, but that's all there was. Mm-hmm. And I think when Star Trek 1 came out, they had figures. So there weren't even figures for Marvel and DC when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So now I'm in my 40s, and I just bought the Doctor Strange Marvel Legends, because they never made Dormammu before. And, you know, I have children I will give Dormammu to, and they won't play with him. But there is that feeling of, I need this because I wasn't able to get it before. Mm-hmm. And I think that can extend to a lot of collecting. Just, I'm an adult who has their own income. I don't have to ask Mom to get me that Doctor Who and explain why it's not the Doctor Who that we already have at home. There's that feeling of freedom to it.
Because Doctor Who is now multi-generational. Do you see any generational shifts in the types of things that people collect or pay attention to?
Well, I think the books are not as paid attention to anymore, because for a long time they were gone. I know they've reprinted them, and I don't know what that's doing to fandom. But I mean, even Big Finish was redoing a lot of them as audio dramas. That's something that I did sort of discount from Big Finish, because I was like, I'm already getting so much from Big Finish, and since I've already read these books and they're in my library, I don't need those things. But people who have listened to them love them. They say that they're excellent. But yeah, I think that the books are something that have kind of gone by the wayside, because what comes out now is mostly tie-in books to the existing season that's going on, you know, currently. So it's, those tend to have less appeal to me, from my impression, you know, other shows do this too, that people don't really go out and buy those as much because they're usually not important, I should say, you know, because like when the series was over and the books were continuing the line, important events happened, new companions, you know, major events, but they can't do that in the books anymore because the major...
Right.
You know, it's the series is the main thing.
The entire Eighth Doctor's history is only contained in audio dramas and books,
right,
because
right.
he made the one movie, and then we had the short, which wrapped him up.
Mm-hmm.
But everything in between, and we just mentioned this in the last panel, in his short he mentions companions that were in the books and the audio dramas.
Wonderful nod.
So,
yeah.
And that's kind of the trap of Doctor Who, is that the timeline's fairly elastic. First of all, he's a time traveler. Also, he shows up in an episode and he says he's 100 years older. We don't know what's happened in those 100 years, but you can fill that hole with these books and these audio dramas. They rarely do something to contradict what's going on in the series, so it could all be canon. It's not like Marvel, where you're clearly watching Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark in a movie, but you're not reading Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. in the comics. There are two separate versions of that character that live. Doctor Who, because of regeneration and because of the elastic time, it could all be canon.
Yeah.
And that's not even focusing on some of the side characters. Like you could have Adam Vastra and Strax having their own set of adventures, just like Lightfoot in the
Big
Audio. Now there are a whole section, the whole table section of them by themselves, not the doctor.
Yeah, and the spinoffs are another thing. Like, I don't know that I have the time to watch Class, you know, with everything else that's in my DVR and on Netflix.
Right.
Like, I don't know that I have enough room for everything that's on television.
Hi. Do you find that other people collect other things, like books, toys, comic books, will try to influence or steer you into their type of collecting? Like, hey, try comics.
Yeah, I have been resisting HeroClix for about 7 years. Because I have friends that are like, well, you should.
How well, successfully?
They came over to my house and they saw everything else I collected and they went, no, you're okay. I have a room in my basement that's long boxes of comics and that's toys. And I'm trying to pull myself out of DVDs now because everything's gone to streaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is Doctor Who exists on Amazon Prime? Do I need every season of New Who on Blu-ray, which I already had it on DVD? My answer is yes, because when Amazon Prime drops it like Netflix did, I still want to watch those episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this quality of, especially with content, where it's not something like a toy, but things like books, DVDs, audio dramas, we can download all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So how important is it to go into the deal room and pick it up and hold it in your hands?
Right, and that's one of the things I was going to bring up. But the problem is primarily a money one. There are alternatives, such as Big Finish allows download only instead of the CDs. Now, I'm one of those crazy people that needs to have physical media. I used to justify it because they used to have such nice liner notes in there. They've stopped doing that, which has annoyed me to no end.
But you haven't stopped buying them?
But I haven't stopped buying them, no. But I like having the physical media. I like, you know, CDs do tend to have better quality than the MP3 downloads and everything else. So, you know, I do sort of justify it, like having them on my shelf. But yeah, I mean, and they do those sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Big Finish does sales periodically that it'll discount a whole range. During their 15th anniversary, they discounted everything on the website, which was a great opportunity. I picked up a lot of stuff that way. So there are ways to, you know, kind of help yourself out with the money side of things. Doesn't help with the time issue.
Yeah. I found that I'm okay, you know, buying a lot of the comic ranges digitally.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, books and like episodes, I have to mm-hmm. have those where I can see them. You know?
Yeah, there is a feeling of looking at your bookshelf.
Yeah, they're it's my trophy room essentially.
Yeah, yeah, because you're going to look at the spines of those books way more than you'll look at the inside of any book. I mean, I have a lot of Marvel omnibuses that I know I have the back issues in a box downstairs in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm in my office, I can look at it and I can pull that book out and look at John Byrne X-Men and then put it away and not have to worry about the condition. There are some things that I collect multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I bought the DVDs, but then the Blu-rays came out, and they're going to look better, and they'll take up just a little less space on the shelf, so I can get another one in there.
Uh-huh.
I'm about this close to having replaced all of my VHSs with DVDs at this point.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, I have a couple VHSs.
What do you do when they discontinue?
then I am very sad.
It's on eBay for $300.
I know. That's that was one of my problems when I was, you know, trying to complete a bunch of my book sets, is that a lot of them at that point were out of print and were astronomically expensive.
Yeah, some of the ones towards the end of Virgin's Range, when they only printed a limited number because they knew they were losing the license and had to pulp anything left over.
Right.
The Dying Days, Lungbarrow, So Violison, all three of those sold for ridiculous prices on eBay.
And that'll keep you collecting because, you know, you can get tired of reading these things, but you know what? I skipped the last one and now it's $150 on eBay, so I should buy it.
Yeah.
Tenth Doctor?
So I have, when I first watched the show, I knew I didn't watch the old Who, so I thought I was going to watch that later. And then when I came here, I learned there was Big Finish and comic books, and so that overwhelmed me so much, I think, that I stopped watching it.
Is that why you came in here? Just to kind of get some quiet space?
Yes.
That doesn't say a lot for this panel. Want to take a nap.
There are all sorts of things that you can do to, you know, there's discounting whole ranges, like I said, which isn't to say that there's no quality there. It's just, for me, there's certain primacy to certain media. But there's also things that you can do. A lot of people run blog. I mean, I actually have a blog also that's called Blogger Who, not to be confused with Blogter Who, which is someone completely different. But it's bloggerwho.livejournal.com. But anyway, where I review what I'm listening to, and I have sort of like the long review, and then there's the short review at the very end for people who don't want to read my long spiel or who don't want to have anything spoiled for them about the story. And so that way you can sort of sift through and see, you know, hey, there's a whole bunch of these audios. You know, I'll find ones that he's rated highly. You know, find someone you trust. There's all sorts of reviewers out there if you do any kind of Google search. And then that way you can sort of limit yourself that way. Well, I'm only going to, you know, listen to things that a lot of people are saying good things about, so I can sort of limit, you know, myself from having to listen to everything out there.
Yeah, I understand your quandary, though. Like, I'm an old school fan who started with the old series. My wife is a new series fan, and she's very intimidated about diving into the older stuff. And it is difficult actually to find a lot of that, unless, like me, you already own all of it. You either have to make friends with someone who has a really good video collection, or, you know, find what you can online. And that can be difficult.
Right. I was old enough to be into Old Who, but I just wasn't. I was more into Star Trek and Star Wars when I was a kid. And I got into it with New Who. And then once I had exhausted New Who, and at that point, Matt Smith was still the Doctor, so there were less episodes than there are now. But once I had seen everything, I'm like, all right, let's go back. And what I did, there was no way I could start with William Hartnell and go through 50 years. It's just too daunting. So I looked for reviews, like Nathan's reviews of like, I know everybody loved Tom Baker, so what's the best Tom Baker story? And then what's his companion? And then I sampled those, and then I did these big swings just to feel like I was watching a different show. Let's watch the Seventh Doctor, and okay, I've seen that, now let's watch the Second Doctor. And it took about a year, but I had gotten to a point through Amazon Prime and Hulu and borrowing DVDs and things that were on YouTube where it was like, oh, well, now I've seen them all. But there's no way to do it in order. I think the way I'd recommend it is just do a little of each Doctor just to kind of see what the show was about at that point. And then you'll decide if you really like Peter Davison. Well, you know there's more of it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely if you're feeling intimidated, that's the best way to go. I think the worst thing that people do, though, is most people, when they try to go back and watch the classic series, or even if they're just trying to dip into William Hartnell, watch An Unearthly Child, which is by no means his best story, and they make a snap decision about William Hartnell's Doctor without experiencing some of his better stories, where his character actually, you know, it's what we would call a character arc nowadays, where he actually grows and changes as a person throughout that first season. I would definitely not recommend that. But you had another thing you wanted to say?
That
was your experience, yeah. And that is a difficult one to see, and especially because the Doctor acts so nasty in that. And if you're coming from now and going back and watching that, it's like, man, the Doctor's so nasty. I don't know if I like this guy. Just give it a few episodes. He mellows considerably. I always say William Hartnell is more like Yoda. As his character becomes, he is very much a Yoda-like character. He laughs a lot. He likes being smarter than everybody, but he's kind of fun in how he does it, you know. And that's good heart now.
No show is great in its first season. Yeah. Sure. Like, I remember when Star Trek: The Next Generation started. I watched Encounter at Farpoint, and I was like, "Well, this is terrible." And then I didn't come back until Spock showed up. But when I came back, I was like, "Wait, this show is great." And then I went through. But those first two seasons were still hard to get through. Like any episode where they're wearing tights is not going to be great. So with something like Doctor Who,
where Riker gets a beard.
Right.
Yeah, but even then, you're in second season. Yeah. They're still wearing the tights.
Yeah, see, I was young enough. I was 7 when it came out, so I was still like, oh, it's new Star Trek. Wow, you know. But I've gone back and watched it, and I'm like, oh god, that was awful back then.
It was rough. I remember seeing it, going, well, Kirk and Spock are still making movies, so.
Right.
But it's always good to find the best of the best, and that'll kind of let you in. When I introduced my wife to Doctor Who, we watched Blink. Because I knew it was a great single story that would hook her in. And I was watching it when she was out of the house, so we didn't start it together. Mm-hmm. But then she ended up seeing everything. Because it was a great story that you could understand. It didn't rely on continuity, and it let you in. Now, Nathan, being an aficionado of Big Finish in the books, would you say there is a Blink of the books? Is there a really good gateway?
For the books...
Or a Big Finish.
So for the books, certainly the past Doctor ones were more standalone. The New Adventures and the Eighth Doctor Adventures were more of a continuing series kind of thing. So you can dip into any of the past Doctor books and just read an isolated one. It's fine. You'll understand what's going on. As far as a specific one, let me think here. I'll give a few recommendations here. The New Adventures... I do feel it's best to start with the New Adventures in the beginning with the Time Worm series, which is the first four books they did. It takes on right after the original series ended. They're very high quality. They're by established writers. You get Terrence Dix in there. You get John Peel, who's gotten kind of a bad rap for things that happened later, but that was a good book. And Paul Cornell, who is a very well-known name, who's written for the new series, written some of the comics as well, but started as a novelist.
Are they all Eighth Doctor stories? Or
no, those are seven. This is the new one. Yeah, this was when the show originally got up. Yes.
Okay.
Those
are pretty out there. I mean, a lot of like Kate Orman's ones are.
Some of the new adventures. Yeah. Well, they were experimenting with the fact that they now consider Doctor Who to be adult. Mm-hmm. So some of the later ones, not those first four, but some of the later ones do get into things that would be kind of risque. You might not want a young child to
How
read.
Old are you? Stop listening.
Right. There's definitely some swearing in them and stuff like that wouldn't, you know, they would never happen to TV. Yeah, adult themes. Yes. But I would start with Time Worm with those. Now, with the past Doctors, it really depends on what Doctors you like. Because I think there are some of those past Doctor books that are awful, and some that are excellent. And it depends on your love of a particular era or not. Like for Hartnell, The Witch Hunters is very good by Steve Lyons. And I also really enjoyed The Sorcerer's Apprentice. But, you know, for Troughton, there's The Dark Path. For Pertwee, there's The Scales of Injustice. There's all sorts of ones that I really enjoyed. But it depends on if you like that era or not.
Are there certain authors you trust more than others?
Paul Cornell I would put up there as a high one. I also really like David McEntee. He has his detractors because he tends to go with what I'd call almost a filmic quality to his books. Some people say, well, he'd rather be writing movies or something, because they come off as very cinematic in their reading. But he's also, I think, very good at finding the voice of a particular doctor and companion. So even though it is kind of like the doctor and companion are suddenly now in like a Hollywood blockbuster instead of their normal, you know, BBC, you know, constrained sets and whatnot, they're exciting, they're fun, and the characters feel right to me. So I like him. Christopher Bullis is another one, which, again, is kind of one of these ones. I trust him immensely. It feels to me like I am watching a TV story. So almost kind of like the other side. Also gets the characters right, but his books could almost be scripts for the series. So I really enjoy those. And even though Kate Orman kind of gets on out there, I do like Kate Orman books.
Oh, yeah.
One that I don't particularly get, but a lot of people love, and he's written for the new series too, is Gareth Roberts. He gets a little too silly for me. I like to have silly characters, but I like my stories to be more, you know, serious. But his he's very much in that sort of Douglas Adams sort of style of being very, like, the situations themselves are kind of ridiculous. And it gets kind of a bit out there for me, but that's one that if you like that kind of thing, he's a good writer.
Nathan, what do you gravitate towards?
Oh, gosh.
In your giant bookshelf full of things.
Oh, yeah, there's so many. Yeah, one of the authors I particularly like, who, and I cannot pronounce his name, it's Peter Angelides or something.
Yeah. Do you know him? Angelides.
Thank you. I really enjoyed
that. That's
his.
The only way I know that, because, reading it, I would never have known.
In fact, I think he write Alien Bodies? Was that one of his?
No, that's Lawrence Miles.
Okay, I really enjoy Lawrence's stuff, especially the whole Faction Paradox story arc that happened with Eighth Doctor. I think that's really well worth reading. It's kind of long. It's a lot of books in that kind of arc, but very intriguing stuff.
I will just put a little segue in there while Nathan's thinking. Here's the difference to me between the New Adventures, which were Seventh Doctor, and then once the movie happened, their BBC books took over, became the Eighth Doctor Adventures, is that the New Adventures, to me, had a lot of payoff for their storylines. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Eighth Doctor Adventures, it seemed like they never quite knew where they were going, and they'd have interesting storylines, like what Nathan's talking about with Faction Paradox, that then they kind of decided...
It took a long time to develop.
Right, and then they kind of decided, well, we don't like Faction Paradox anymore, so we bring in a different writer, who wasn't writing the storyline before, and we're just ending it. And there were a lot of storylines like that in the Eighth Doctor Adventures that felt to me like we didn't have any payoff because they just kind of abruptly ended it. So I always preferred the New Adventures.
Yeah. And there are some you know, let's say venerable authors from the older times who whose output has been uneven. But
I know who you're talking about.
They're still, fun to read, definitely.
Well, here's the thing, because I'm sure you're talking about Terrence Dix, so I'll just put it out there. Some of his are brilliant.
They are.
And it just seems like it just depends on when he's getting the commission to write the book or not, if he has enough time or whatever, or if he's just going to dash it out, or if he's going to sit there and actually... Time Worm Exodus, which is one of those first four books, is excellent. It is a sequel to the War Games. It is fantastic, well-thought-out story. And then you get stuff like Shakedown.
I'll just throw Shakedown. Shakedown.
You didn't mind Shakedown, okay.
I didn't mind Shakedown for the interesting stuff he did with Iruten.
Okay. What's the one he did with Morbius with the Fifth Doctor?
That one was
awful.
What was that?
I can't remember what it was called anymore. But anyway, the quality level just is all over the place.
Now, that's a great point, because I am one of those people that I walked in the dealer's room today, saw all the Big Finish, and there's more Big Finish than there were ever episodes, and I'm like, well, I don't know where to start. And listening to Nathan and Nathan, it's like, well, this one's good, but this one's terrible. Right. And there's so much, you just don't want to waste your time.
Right.
So do you ever bail on these? Do you ever get a book or get a Big Finish and go, oh, I can't even...
I've finished everything that I have started.
Your eyes got really hard and dark when you said that.
The hardest one... It's funny because I don't think that this is the worst of the books, but maybe it just had to do with the time of my life. It is a really bad one, though. Mm-hmm. Is Parasite, which was one of the New Adventures.
Oh, yeah.
And I must have started and stopped that book at least 6 times and gone into... It took me like 6 or 7 months to read this book, just because it was such hard going. It's Jim Mortimer, I think, who I find his books kind of difficult. The only one of his books that I didn't find difficult was the one he co-wrote with Andy Lane. So I'm going to attribute that to Andy Lane's influence. But I just find his books really hard going. And Parasite, it's very much an Arthur C. Clarke, if you're familiar with the Rama series. But it's like, take away all like the good writing and try to do that thing of you're inside like basically an alien being that's like also like a spaceship. And it's like, it's very interesting in sort of a cerebral way of, likening different like bodily functions to actual, beings that exist inside there and you interact with, but it's oh God, is it boring?
Yeah, I think I've toughed out every single one that I started, but some of them took a lot longer than others, let's just say.
I will say, though, I bailed on Big Finish entirely when the new series came out, because like there was a run in that period in 2004... Maybe it was early 2005. It was either late 2004, where I was just like, man, these are just awful right now. And I was like, and they're probably going to get canceled anyway because the new series is coming out. And so I just sort of stopped. And, I just started watching the new series, and that's what I did. But since then, you know, I've kind of come back to Big Finish, you know, and now that's part of the reason why it's hard for me, and I'm listening to so many of them is because I'm catching back up because there's such a long gap there. I've been back for, I think, 4 years now, and I'm still catching up.
Well, this is actually a great year to do it because we haven't had anything on television. I mean, yes. We'll have the Christmas special, but we haven't had anything since last year's Christmas special, so this is probably a great way to catch up and get your Who fix.
I know. It does sort of have, you know, sort of disturbing echoes of that 14-year drought, though, that we had between 89 and, you know, started a new series.
Right, and it seems like that was the golden era of all of these books and things coming out. They were serving that need of filling that space. And the Star Trek novels were the same way in the 70s, you know, between the movies and the show ending. That was the only place you could get content.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But now, with the main one being out, whenever I look at Expanded Universe, I always think of what George Lucas said, was everything counted until he made Phantom Menace, and then nothing counted.
Right. Yes.
Because he didn't want to be bothered reading all those books. He just wanted to write his scripts and do what he wanted, and when people brought up problems, he's like, stuff I didn't do doesn't count. Mm-hmm. And that's always kind of like, kind of stabbed Expanded Universe to me in general.
Yeah, you're going to get me on my soapbox here, because that's the thing that I absolutely hate. Because it's, you create a fan community. You serve that fan community and you give them content. I mean, the same thing's going on with Star Wars again with the sequels, with The Force Awakens, where they're basically like, everything. You know, before, George Lucas was like, only the contradictions don't count. You can count everything else. But basically, when Disney took over, it was the entire EU, every single book you've ever read, it's all wrong.
Right.
It never happened. Yeah. And that's what... And with Star Wars, it's probably going to be one of those things that's never going to impact them negatively because it has such a big following. And primarily, the followers are people who have only seen movies, and so they didn't read the books. But it's hard because it makes me very angry because this is stuff that I like and cared about, and I'd like to see them be able to use those elements. I mean, people say, well, it still doesn't take away or erase those things. You know, you still have them on your bookshelf or whatever. But if they're never going to use that content again, it means they can't ever expand on it, which is one of the nice things about these expanded universes. Is it's like, oh, you know, a few years down the line, an author may say, like, oh, this person did this thing with this, and I really like that, and I'm going to use it. And that's why I don't like discontinuities. I like for everything to sort of meet together. And even though people always say it's too hard to do it, you know, for years, you know, various ranges, Star Wars is the best example. Comics, video games, books, they all agreed with each other. I mean, vastly different media that all had some sort of oversight that made sure that they all agreed. So it is possible. It's just some people don't want to put the effort into making it happen.
Well, that's like when Doctor Who decided to keep the continuity with New Who. They could have said, nope.
Yeah.
Classic Who's done. You know,
reboot.
There's been a 10-year gap. We've lost a generation. The people X years and older will probably just keep to the old Doctor Who, and we'll just go for the kids.
Right.
But they didn't. They kept everything continuity. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's created the problems when Eccleston didn't want to come back and be the War Doctor.
Yeah. Right.
But then we got the War Doctor.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal.
Yes. We got John Hurt.
Exactly. Yeah. And speaking of that, I mean, I don't know if you guys have heard any of the Big Finish John Hurt War Doctor stuff.
I know that they exist. Yeah.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
I highly recommend them. You know, so I think it was a remarkable decision that they made, you know, to preserve the continuity. And Doctor Who has always been very respectful of its own, you know, history in that way.
But it's so elastic compared to other things.
It is. They've allowed, you know, some wiggle room.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's one of the most remarkable things about this show.
Yeah, you don't have to reboot it because you could do a completely different show and still have it fit.
Yeah.
You can regenerate him into whatever you want. Mm-hmm. He could essentially change the TARDIS chameleon circuit if you didn't want that phone box. Mm-hmm. But it would still be Doctor Who.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, one of the things that I've heard is that was a huge... the BBC wanted to push that when they were bringing the series back. They said, let's just reboot it, start it over. And it was Russell T. Davies who said, no, we're going to keep the established continuity. So that's really something we should all be thankful to him for, that they did keep that, because he pushed for that.
It was brave.
I just wanted to bring this up, but there was a David Tennant, the 10th Doctor book I used to own. I think it was called Forever. I don't know, I'm not entirely sure, but the Doctor is invested in like a child's disappearance. He's in the bedroom, it's filled with like sci-fi paraphernalia. And like Martha Jones and him start to talk about like where Star Wars went, and they talk about like Jar Jar Binks, and she says it's probably the worst thing that George Lucas came up with, and the Doctor makes like a joke about, oh no, George Lucas didn't create Star Wars, he only received psychic historical documents that allowed him to create the franchise.
I love that in the Doctor Who universe, Star Wars is fictional.
Yes. Apparently in Doctor Who universe, Star Wars is canon, but it's also a series.
Yeah.
Which is like...
That and the tenth Doctor told us that the Muppet movie existed in the Doctor Who universe.
Well, one of the funny things
they reference Star Trek as well, don't they? Like, no, they
did. Well, I know they landed in 1979, and Tennant went, "Great, the Muppet movie."
That's great.
Harry Potter is fictional because of that episode of Shakespeare.
Right, because he mentions J.K. Yes. Rowling.
They mention J.K. Rowling.
Yeah,
they do.
But Shakespeare's real, and so are witches.
And
yep.
There are comics that crossover with Star Trek.
Yeah, which is a great comic. I was the one thing I was disappointed with the comic was there's an if you've never read it, IDW did Doctor Who Star Trek The Next Generation crossover where the TARDIS appears in the holodeck and then Picard and Matt Smith have to deal with each other, and there's a flashback in one issue where they went, wait, we met before, and Tom Baker meets William Shatner, and when that happened, my head exploded. I was like, we're gonna get everything. We're gonna get Peter Davison meeting Sisko, and they didn't quite push it to the other series, but I always wanted to see a sequel that dealt with Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise and the other Doctors.
So that feels a bit like when Star Trek and X-Men crossed over to me.
Oh, that's the craziest comic I've ever read.
Oh, yeah.
What?
That came out the same year as when Archie met the Punisher. Yeah.
The 90s was a weird time for comics.
Meeting, right?
Yeah, yes. No. Well, yeah, the Punisher came to Riverdale to kill a drug dealer who apparently exists now in Riverdale. But the Star Trek X-Men one is so crazy because it was in the 90s and they were drawn very Jim Lee, very like extreme, like the Fox Kids show. But then they just drew them on to like the original series Enterprise, and it looked like somebody took a gold key Star Trek comic and just kept drawing Wolverine on everything.
Well, remember, and then there was the next generation. They did a sequel one of Next Generation in X-Men. There were two different comics.
Oh, I never even read that.
Yeah. And then it actually went into a novel, and then they had a novel, it was one of the Star Trek novels, continued the story from the comic of the Star Trek Next Generation X-Men.
Now then, here's a question. We've had a Star Trek Doctor Who. I love that story, but I could never consider it personal canon. Like, where is that line draw? I mean, we're in one franchise and into another one.
I think that, you know, the flexibility of comics, you know, doing these sort of, like, alternate universe type of, you know, things that they do all the time, pretty much, you know. I think it's allowed, but I would not consider.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say it happened.
Yeah.
And is that a question? Do you get to a point where there's just so many stories that do you worry about how everything fits together with this, or are you just going, well, here's another adventure. I'm going to block out everything else that happened, and
like,
just take it on its own merits.
Some people get really obsessive about, like, you know, unit dating. Like, when do the unit stories happen in real time? You know. Some people argue it's the 70s. Some people argue it's the 80s. You know,
it's clearly the 70s.
Yes, but like, you know, some people really care about that, and others others don't. So I guess it's a personal decision.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as far as like canon goes, I mean that can be a useful tool though when you're trying to limit media. I mean, because there are certain things that Big Finish do that are tangentially Doctor Who related, like Iris Wildthyme, which I don't really particularly consider canon, because pretty much everything Paul Mars writes that is Doctor Who, he tries to make purposefully like not fit in with other things, and he always throws in references and things that like you know. Make it difficult to work things in, and so I kind of like just discount, you know, the character of Iris Wildthyme, everything that she's in. It's just kind of like that's off in some parallel universe somewhere, so I don't really worry about it.
Is it too much for the characters? Because we've had talked about this before. Doctor Who gets away with it because you can regenerate him, and he effectively can go on forever, and they'll find an excuse for the 13th, 15th, 20th regeneration. But for the human characters or other non-immortal characters, how much can they possibly do? Like, how many stories can Jo Grant possibly have in the time that in her, we're presuming, early 20s to where she leaves the show and then, you know, gets out? How much could she have possibly packed in those years in a real continuity lifetime?
Well, here's the thing with that. And that's something that I've thought about before, too. Season breaks are our friends there. Because if you think about it, how much time actually occurs in a television story? Yeah, it might have been four episodes, six episodes, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it was shown over a certain number of weeks. But, you know, usually, you know, only 1 or 2 days within that character's life happen. I mean, some of the early Hartnell's ones, like Marco Polo, yeah, they're there for like a month. But that's usually not how long that the stories happen. So because of that, so for instance, let's take Ian. Ian and Barbara, you know, they're supposedly with the Doctor for 2 years. They never quite say that outright, but they arrived back in 1965 and they left in 1963. They consider it okay. The novelization for The Chase actually specifically says that they've lived 2 years within the TARDIS, and the Doctor purposefully sends them to 1965. And so because of that, you know, there's room, because the amount of screen time that's actually taken place for them is, we maybe seen like 3 months of that 2 year snapshot. So if they're coming out with more companion chronicles that feature them or novels that feature them, to me it's like, oh, okay, that fits in with that huge amount of time that we still haven't seen. Now, Jo's a special case because she lived on Earth during what one would expect, you know, were mostly normal days of her life, you know, and there wasn't an alien invasion every week.
And she, yeah. So. And she wasn't on the TARDIS jumping back and possibly jumping back to the moment she left.
Right, exactly. So there, you're right. That one's a very different case, but for the most part with companions, there's a huge room in their life where if you imagine they spent the same number of years with the Doctor that they did on TV, and we've only seen a small smidge of that, mm-hmm. that you could expand into.
To answer, there actually is an alternate universe that Doctor visits where a lot of franchises like Sherlock Holmes and Star Trek are all canon. Like they're all inhabited in that universe. And there's actually a book called The All-Consuming Fire where the Seventh Doctor goes and visits Sherlock Holmes, but like
that's
Sherlock
a really good
Holmes
one.
Has
yes,
no
that is one
and
good
fights
ones.
H.P. Lovecraft, Cthulhu monsters, and that's the way they explain the crossover out of continuity. He visits that other universe where they do exist outside of the Doctor Who universe. That's why Sherlock Holmes is fictional in the Doctor Who universe, but real in that.
Is that the Big Finish adaptation of that has it as an alternate universe? Because in the New Adventures, it wasn't an alternate universe. They just said Sherlock Holmes exists in the Doctor Who universe.
It's a version.
Yeah, it's one of the Virgin New Adventures, but it wasn't an alternate universe. It was part of the universe of the Seventh Doctor that they were doing at that time. Now, Big Finish, when they adapted it, because they just recently adapted it, which I haven't listened to, they might have said that.
They did say it was a different universe.
I did listen to it recently, but I can't recall.
Well, yeah, the great old ones come from a different universe, but that's just, sure. They're just pulling from the H.P. Lovecraft mythology there, but it's not a different universe.
Well, that helps everybody that wants to see Peter Capaldi and Benedict Cumberbatch in the same episode.
Yes.
Well, Big Finish used Nick Briggs as Sherlock Holmes because he does a series of Sherlock Holmes audios.
Oh, really?
So when
he
the Doctor
really good on it.
Does Sherlock Holmes sound like a Dalek?
No.
Elementary, Watson. But you know, we're almost out of time. I think we should just leave off with, what is your favorite piece of expanded universe? Mm. Your favorite book? Your favorite Big Finish? Or at least, what would you recommend?
I've got so many. That's the problem. I guess for me, my favorite Big Finish right now, because it changes as I listen to things constantly, is a companion chronicle told from Ian's point of view called The Rocket Men. It's very much in that 60s style of serialized adventure. I mean, it's basically the Rocketeer or Commander Cody or whatever it was called that used to be in the old serials and whatnot, but it's kind of like, what a Doctor Who decided to do that? And it's a really good one because, like most of the companion chronicles, which is a range that I really love and I don't like the fact they've scaled those back, is... it's very much focused on Ian and his where he was in that sort of second season towards the end with the Doctor and how he was coming to realize, you know, his relationship with Barbara. And it's super well done. It's told in a very modern style where it's not linear. You know, a lot of programs nowadays, they cut between two different time periods. And it does that. It's not a lot of companion chronicles are just the character talking in the present and just talking about what happened to him. This is much more dynamic in how it flows together. And it's a really well done piece. And I would really recommend that one for anyone.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm very much into the War Doctor right now. So I highly recommend his audios. I've listened to the first sort of a collection of them. I'm going to buy the other two this weekend because they're just really good. George Mann's War Doctor novel, Engines of War, is also very, very good. We were very excited actually to work with him this year on, he scripted a story pack for Doctor Who Legacy that we provided the artwork for.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a really, really interesting writer. I like his stuff a lot.
Yeah, I already mentioned the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover, which I still think is fantastic. The Tiptons wrote it. It's an 8-issue series, and there's a trade paperback of it. It was one of the best inter-franchise crossovers I've ever read. They're usually not a great fit together, and this managed to get the tone of both franchises just right. But I want to thank you guys for coming on. Thank Chicago TARDIS for having us, and you guys asked some great questions. Nathan, how do we find you?
You can find my blog at blogger, that's blogger_who.livejournal.com, and you will be able to find me at www.42cast.com in January.
You can find our stuff here in the dealer room, actually. We're also online at pixelwho.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that good stuff. Come by. We'd love to chat with you guys. That's one of the reasons we love doing these conventions.
And you can listen to Caffeinated Comics, which is my podcast, and you're all on it now because we've recorded this panel. That's available on iTunes. It's available on Stitcher. You can follow me on Twitter at Not In My Book, and we also have a Caffeinated Comics Facebook page where we tend to post a lot of news, like when the latest Doctor Who trailer comes out. But thank you guys for coming. I hope you enjoy the rest of TARDIS.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.